On episode 420 of the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Aliza Sherman and Dr. Junella Chen and discuss their book, Cannabis and CBD for Health and Wellness. You can find the full show notes for this episode at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/420.
Have you decided you're ready to make a change? To reclaim your health and fitness? The 40 Plus Fitness Podcast is here for you. I'm your host, Alan Meisner. I'm an NSAM certified personal trainer with a specialization in corrective exercise and fitness nutrition. Let me be your coach as you find your way on your health and fitness journey. All right, let's go.
Hello, and welcome to episode 420. I am so glad you're here. Thank you for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness. I wanted to mention to you that we do have a Facebook group in case you weren't aware. You can go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group, and it's a really cool group of people that are getting together. We're close to 1,000 people now, and so it's a really cool vibe, a really cool conversation. People looking to get more fit, to get healthy, and to be happier, because that's what it's all about, being well. And so join us over on the Facebook group, the 40 Plus Fitness Facebook group at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/group. I thought for episode 420, it would be kind of cool to bring up the pot issue. Cannabis and CBD are becoming legalized across the United States. They're being legalized in other countries. And for the first time in a long time, them being used as medicine and therapies is being widely looked at and studied, more so than it ever was before, because when a drug is called a type 1 in the United States, it is virtually impossible for folks to do any testing, to obtain any of it, to do any real testing to determine efficacy and what it could be used for. So a lot of that's happening today. And so I wanted to bring this conversation up again. We've talked about CBD in the past. We have not talked directly about cannabis. So I did want to bring on some experts, and I could not have done better, I don't think. The experts I'm bringing on, Aliza Sherman and Dr. Junella Chen, they are advocates for marijuana, cannabis use, CBD use. Aliza is the co-founder of Elementa, the fastest growing women's network focused on health, wellness, and cannabis. She's been featured in several different publications and television shows. And then Dr. Junella Chen is an osteopathic physician and founder and chief medical officer of MedLeaf RX, an integrative medicine practice based in California and New York. And she's the director of education for the Association of Cannabis Specialists. So two really great women. I know you're going to enjoy this conversation. With no further ado, here's Aliza and Dr. Chen. Aliza, Dr. Chen, welcome to 40 Plus Fitness.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. So excited to be here.
Now, this is episode 420, and so I thought it was apropos that I have a conversation about cannabis and CBD. So I was glad to see you had a book out there. It's called Cannabis and CBD for Health and Wellness, which is just perfect. Mm-hmm. So really excited to have the two of you on here. Enjoyed the book. I always like learning new things, and obviously with cannabis and CBD just starting to kind of make a run at being somewhat legalized in some places, and obviously illegal in others. There's some things we got to work through before we could actually even start this conversation. But where it is becoming legal, California, Washington, it's Colorado in particular, I think is where they're opening the most. Florida, I think, is doing now some medical marijuana. So obviously some recognition that this does have a place in health and wellness, and that cannabis is in fact a medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole landscape has changed since just 3 years ago when I got into the industry. And this is Aliza, by the way. I have a cannabis education company to educate women in particular about the health and wellness benefits. And when I first started out, there were fewer states that were legal, and the stigma was intense. I was even afraid to tell anybody what I was doing. I was transitioning from the tech industry into cannabis, but I was experiencing a lot of health and wellness issues myself, aging issues, 40 plus, 50 plus, and cannabis seemed like a good natural alternative to some of the medications that they were trying to give me. So I really feel like we've come a long way in 3 short years, but we have a long way to go.
Well, especially with the different states having medical programs now. I mean, there's over 33 states. When I started this integrating medical cannabis, I've been practicing this for over 10 years because I had the medical advantage of going, the educational advantage of going to medical school in California shortly after they legalized it. And that's over 20 years ago. So for me, I was in this middle of a switch box and I had the best of both worlds, learning, you know, conventional MD school, but also learning how to integrate cannabis with my patients. And now we have dispensaries. I'm in New York now. We have dispensaries that have a pharmacist in it, in every dispensary, and dispensing it like regular medication. So it has come a long way.
Yeah. You know, I was coming from a corporate world a few years ago, and I remember, you know, they started legalizing it in different states and making it recreational, because that was when it, you know, it's like, okay, if it's medical, I probably can't fire you for it. But if it's not medical, if it's just recreational, then how does that play out? And I was talking to our general counsel and I said, so if someone goes to Colorado where it's completely legal to use this substance, they use it and then they come back here and obviously, you know, they're completely back down to normal and they're walking around doing their job and we do a random drug test, can we really fire them? And he says, yeah, absolutely. Can we talk a little bit about, you know, the legalities of, and some of the stigmas here, because, you know, the whole point of, and it's weird because I'm down here in Panama now and the culture is very different from Arkansas, as you might imagine. A lot of my friends use cannabis on a daily basis and for not just for medical. I mean, they're clearly recreational, but can we kind of talk a little bit about that? Because it's just interesting because it's against the law federally and it's legal in certain states. And, you know, it's just bizarre to me. It's really hard for me to wrap my mind around where this is and why it's shifting so fast.
Well, so this is Aliza. I can tell you, I'm living in Alaska and people don't know, but Alaska pretty much legalized cannabis in 1975. They absolutely decriminalized it and you were allowed to grow it in your home, carry up to an ounce on your person. It's a very different scene up here in Alaska, but pretty far removed from everything else. If you think about it, it's incredibly complex. So you mentioned federally illegal. Yes, that adds a huge layer of complexity over the fact that each state has their own set of laws, rules, and regulations. Each state manages their cannabis retail, growing, retail, manufacturing, all in different ways. So no matter where you end up going, there's a whole set of rules. So one of the things I do is market cannabis and CBD companies and trying to navigate what's allowed and what's not allowed, even from an advertising and marketing standpoint, is very challenging. But to your last part of the question, why is it happening so quickly? Well, there's a lot of money to be had. And where there's money, there's power and greed. I mean, it really boils down to that. We think about when the internet first became something available to the public, all the big companies came in as soon as they knew that people were there. So if people are consuming and people have access, everyone's going to be looking at this industry for the money. Whereas a lot of us, like June, like myself, like many of the people we work with, are looking at it for the health and wellness benefits. I mean, the money's there. We're not going to ignore that. But I think that's a driver.
Yeah, and it's really inconvenient for patients for even continuity of care. For example, I have a 73-year-old patient who has Parkinson's, and she finds the cannabis quite helpful for appetite, for her muscle spasms. She's able to feed herself at the dinner table, which is a huge, huge a feat. And she has a home in Boca in Florida. She sees me in New York, and then she has another home in Arizona. So she carries 3 different medical cards and has to see 3 different physicians, in each state. because she can't take her medicine that works for the Parkinson's to when she goes down to Florida for the, you know, when she has New York winters and she goes to Florida. So she has to, it's really, really, really inconvenient for patients.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the things I was, you know, looking, because you did a really good job in the book of kind of going through the different ways that we can use the cannabis. So like, you know, not just the smoking or the vaping, not just the brownies, but then basically, you know, now I guess they got, you said they had capsules and other means of getting it. But it's still, if you get caught transporting it at the airport, TSA, you're going to get busted.
Well, yes and no, but don't do it. So I think TSA has actually in certain states, and especially from legal to legal states, I hate to say it, but they sometimes will turn a blind eye. I would never, ever risk it and never, ever recommend that anybody do that or try that. But if you also look at some of the cases, like the grandmother who has it, the CBD tincture for her arthritis, getting caught, getting arrested, but then everything gets dropped and everything is returned to her because there's this ambiguity. So I think some of what June was talking about with patients, there's a lot of confusion for patients. There's a lot of confusion for anyone who purchases, consumes, and may have it on their person. What can I do? What can't I do?
Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. What I also do, and you had mentioned about employment, is you know, if it's, you know, medically necessary and patients come to see me to get a medical card, sometimes I'll write a letter. The patient will ask that I write a letter to their employer, you know, saying, you know, if the drug test comes out positive, it's because, you know, they're using the CBD or THC or combination of the cannabis. And I'll just write on my note, you know, patient will use it according to the employer's policies. So, you know, not maybe not during the work hours, but after hours or not when they're not on call, et cetera. And usually I haven't had any issues with any patients, actually, even with this letter, with a supporting letter.
Okay. Mm, well, helpful. The other stigma, I think, is, you know, obviously we're going to have family members that are going to be like, okay, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Why are you becoming a pothead? And, you know, how do we have that conversation with them?
Well, you know, it's not even just stigma, it's stereotyping. So if you think about all of the media, even entertainment, the image of the stoner dude, I think it's really important for, first and foremost, for anyone who is comfortable consuming it either in a recreational, as you say, sort of a relaxation and enjoyment fashion, or in a medical fashion, that they talk about it, that they're not afraid to do so. The more we talk about it and normalize it and show, you know, it is everybody from every different walk of life is potentially a consumer of cannabis, particularly on the health and wellness side. So if we can just get rid of some of those stereotypes, I think that would be extremely helpful. And as a mom, as a busy mom who doesn't want to be ever, ever altered or high around my kids, there are many different ways to consume cannabis. And now with the advent of CBD products, without getting that high, but getting the benefits, the nourishment internally for your systems to regulate hormones, to help you with anxiety. I mean, those are the kinds of things that are helpful to moms, but you don't have to buy into that stoner dude persona. You can be very successful, very productive, very active, and very engaged, and still be a consumer of cannabis or CBD.
Okay, let's dive in a little bit and talk about how cannabis actually works within our body. What is actually going on when someone consumes or smokes cannabis?
To understand how cannabis works with your body and your brain, I just want to go over the existing systems that we all know what we have in our body. You know, we know about our circulatory system, our digestive system, immune system, our central nervous system, you know, what gets us up and going in the morning. But there's another system that was more recently discovered called the endocannabinoid system. And we don't learn about this in medical school or science class. But the endocannabinoid system is our body's own system that makes cannabinoid-like molecules. And that's why our body reacts well to plant-based cannabinoids are coming from the cannabis plant, because our body has a system that's equipped to react to it. And this system is so important, it actually modulates and regulates all the other systems. It interfaces with all those other systems that you've learned about. And that's why it seems like, oh, well, you know, I hear that it works for Crohn's disease and anxiety and migraines and PTSD and then Parkinson's. And it seems like, oh, well, this is just a snake oil, this magic elixir. But it's because this endocannabinoid system regulates all these different systems in our body. That is why the CBD or cannabis or different parts of the cannabis plant works so well for humans.
And also, if you think about the chemical compounds within cannabis, we write a lot about this in our book, cannabinoids and terpenes being two of the most common chemical compounds in the cannabis plant. Well, cannabinoids, June just mentioned that we naturally produce cannabinoids. They're called endocannabinoids when they're in our body, but phytocannabinoids or plant-based cannabinoids are very prevalent in cannabis. So cannabis happens to have, you know, over 100 cannabinoids that have been identified so far. And that is more than pretty much any other plant out there. So in a sense, it's like a superfood or a super plant, because it's just so rich in these chemical compounds. And each one of them has sort of a different set of effects. And the one I like to really talk about and that appeals to me is linalool. Oh, I'm sorry, that's actually a terpene. All right, I was just going to move into terpenes next. Terpenes, though, are other chemical compounds that are in foods. Color, smell, and taste of foods are the terpenes, and linalool being one of them is also in lavender. Myrcene is another terpene, also in mangoes. Back to the cannabinoids, it's a lot of alphabet soup. So it's, you know, we know THC, that is what alters your perception. We know CBD now, cannabidiol, and that is sort of almost the antagonist and partner of THC in a way. They really interact with each other a lot. There's CBN that makes you really sleepy, but if you have too much of it, it makes you paranoid. So if you just think about it, there's all these chemical compounds in the plant that make it an effective medicine. And as June mentioned, it affects all these different systems and all these different effects. And that's why sometimes everyone thinks it's just too good to be true, but it really is just such a richness of chemicals that react well with our bodies and brains.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the key benefits as I'm not going to say that cannabis is mainstream yet, but it's definitely getting there, is that, you know, you're hearing about how they can do different formulations of the cannabinoids and the terpenes to get certain effects. So if you want to, mm-hmm. you know, relax, so you're dealing with maybe doing you've got some chronic stress or anxiety, there's a formulation that's going to work best with you to help address that specifically. And so you're not just saying, okay, I'm going to take all the good and the bad. They're getting pretty good at zeroing down on some of these things, aren't they?
Yes, we know the profiles. So we know the different plant compounds. There's testing for that. We know how much there is. So here in New York, when we recommend medical cannabis, we're talking about milligrams, down to the milligrams. And I chart how these cannabis medicines react with their prescription medications. So we keep track of that, and we can be quite precise. So it's not take a bite of this cookie or a sliver of this gummy, but we're using oils that are measured. We're using capsules and tablets that are fast dissolving or enteric coated that might work in your stomach in a timed release. So there's really there. I think they're using pharmaceutical type technology when making cannabis medicine now. When they're doing topicals, they're using certain penetration enhancers and grabbing technology from the dermatological field. So it's come a long way.
And also the products that are coming out, back to the cannabinoids and terpenes, products are coming out that are emphasizing certain cannabinoids or certain terpenes or combinations. So you might see something that is heavier in CBN as a sleep aid, or something with THCV, which is a variant of THC, and that would potentially be for focus or even for appetite suppression, which is kind of weird because you always think of the munchies if you have THC, but THCV can suppress appetite instead of stimulate it. So you're starting to see products that really narrow down the cannabinoid concentrations and terpene concentrations for also those specific effects.
I think, you know, it's funny because, let's say funny because it was actually a comedy, but, you know, the Cheech and Chong movies when the guys, you know, they're joking about, you know, glaucoma medicine. You know, I think that was the big joke back in the 70s and 80s of what pot was for. But it's much better than that. It does a lot more for us as a medicine. Can you talk about some of the different things that we can use cannabis for as a medicine to include acute issues, chronic issues, and even some mental and emotional issues?
The number one thing I see in my patients are chronic pain. And chronic pain is a very broad diagnosis. It can come from fibromyalgia. It can come from low back pain, migraines, even pelvic pain for women. Because it's CBD is such a potent anti-inflammatory, and I talk about CBD and THC the most because it's the most well-researched, but CBD is a very potent anti-inflammatory. And what patients are finding for chronic pain is that it really gets to the root of the problem. So you're not just masking it by taking care of the pain and just taking a pain reliever, but you're getting rid of that underlying inflammation that's causing the pain in the first place. Parkinson's patients, I had mentioned before, is very good for the muscle tremors and also for the sleep and appetite. I see ALS patients, epilepsy patients, both pediatric and adults. I see quite a bit of epilepsy patients, insomnia, anxiety, Crohn's disease, colitis. So it's a varied practice. Patients usually come to see me after they've exhausted all options. Of course, I see cancer patients because it helps with nausea, appetite, and pain, and the immune system as well.
Okay, and one of the other things you mentioned in the book was it was good for gout.
Yes, so gout is great because what do you think causes gout? Inflammation.
Yeah. Right. And so this, you know, and I think, you know, if you actually look at most chronic diseases, their inflammation is kind of a basis for almost every one of them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So when you have chronic inflammation, that's when it becomes a serious disease. I mean, you look at, you know, high blood pressure and diabetes, that all comes from inflammation.
Now, you know, a lot of people are going to go at this and they're going to do self-medication, if you will, experimenting. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, now with it, you know, becoming medically legal in most states or a lot of states, they can start working with their doctors if their doctors are familiar or willing to get into this. Can we talk about the contrasting of whether people should be doing the self-experimentation or whether they should go to a doctor first when doing some of this stuff?
Well, I can talk about my personal experience, and also because I mentioned Elementa before, my company that educates women about using cannabis and CBD for health and wellness. The thing that we recommend most of all is see your doctor. But that's very, very hard if they're not in a legal state. And it's also hard if their doctor is connected to a hospital. This is something I learned from June. If they're connected with a hospital, the hospitals are federally funded, so they cannot even talk about it. So you're really looking for either somebody in private practice. But in some of the states, you also have naturopaths who can talk about it. But from a personal standpoint, I'll totally let June talk about from a doctor standpoint. But from a personal standpoint, what I've learned is, what is on the label, if you don't have a doctor available and you're not consulting with the doctor, what's on the label as a recommended dose, you should always start lower. And the saying is start low and go slow. You incrementally add a little bit more over time until you get to that feeling that you want, that relief that you want, the effect that you want, but that you don't just hit your body right away with the cannabis. I have gone from cannabis to CBD just because I find that a lot of what I experience is either anxiety or inflammation. And so I know that with CBD, you can actually take a lot more of CBD than THC you kind of need to in order to get an effect. On the cannabis side, 2.5 milligrams is totally enough for me, where if other people are like 15 to 25 milligrams or even more. On the CBD side, 25 to 30 milligrams is more my sort of dose. So it's a lot of numbers. It's a lot of calculation. You really have to pay attention, but you can't overdose on either of them. You might get uncomfortable, but you can't actually overdose and die from either cannabis with THC or CBD as an adult, as a healthy adult.
I think the take-home message really here is that cannabis is unique because there's really no precedent. There's no other drug in the world that we're using recreationally and medically. And so patients really have to demand that their health practitioners get educated. You know, really, doctors need to tell patients the difference between their opinion versus scientific fact. And with plant-based medicine, there isn't one-size-fits-all thinking. Unfortunately, with the medical model, what we're taught in med school, it is one size fits all. It's here's your pill, you know, here's 5 milligrams of your blood pressure pill. I expect to see you in a month and we'll measure your blood pressure again. But with plant-based medicine, it just doesn't work that way because everyone will react differently with herbal medicine. And really, this whole movement, I see it as a plant, sort of going back to plant-based medicine, this medical cannabis movement, because it's a wake-up call to the healthcare system. Patients are turning away from mainstream medicine and heading to support groups like Elementa or apothecaries that have CBD shops or cannabis shops, because these support systems are giving them what they need. They're listening, they're connecting better with their consumers or their patients, and they're providing education and an alternative, a more natural approach to health and healing.
You know, in the kind of the full circle of this, it's interesting because, you know, I guess the reason pot's illegal is because it was deemed a gateway drug to do these other things. But with the opiate epidemic, you know, basically, you know, now we're pain meds and everything that people are taking. This is a safer alternative for a lot of those pain issues that people are getting addicted to opiates on.
Well, they're calling it an exit ramp drug now. And the reason it's illegal, though, there's a lot of misnomers about why cannabis was made illegal. And it was not because it's a gateway drug. And it was not because people actually proved that it was a gateway drug. It was really based more on historical, you know, greed, propaganda, control and power. It was not about the medical issues around it, because it was being vilified back in the 20s, the 1920s and the 1930s. And so we just forget the history of why it was made illegal. It had nothing to do with danger at all. And so we've just sort of been brought up with these false narratives about it being dangerous. And it is not. It is certainly not on the same level as heroin or cocaine, even though it's been scheduled that way in the U.S., and it can help with addiction. And it's a healthier alternative to some of these very terrible drugs. It can really bring you back to balance and health and keep you away from some of these dangerous substances.
Well, also, when you look at the history, too, it was during the time when they started to create inexpensively manufactured, you know, precisely dosed, easy to swallow pills versus a tincture. You know, it was 1898, Bayer synthesized aspirin from birch bark. And then we had barbiturates that came in. So we really take pills and capsules for granted. But, you know, before that time, it was, you know, yes, here's a tincture, here's a drop of this, put this in your tea. So it was really, I think, a perfect storm, you know, in terms of the politics, the anti-immigration thoughts, you know, caused by the Great Depression. And then there was pharma.
Okay. Yep. Well, Aliza, I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are 3 strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
Well, having written this book, The Cannabis and CBD for Health and Wellness, but also my previous book was The Happy Healthy Nonprofit, where we did a lot of research about what does it take to get well. And I know even for myself, really important is sleep, getting a good night's sleep, and moving your body. We are in such a sedentary world now, sitting behind a desk at a computer, hunched over. your body is suffering and so much disease is from not moving around. And then the final thing is just be really mindful what you put into your body, what you put on your body. Because if you think about it, even when you put things on topically, your skin is your biggest organ, is what I've heard said, and it absorbs things. So what do we put on our bodies? What do we take into our bodies? Be really super mindful about those things.
Okay, Dr. Chin, again, I define wellness as being the healthiest, fittest, and happiest you can be. What are three strategies or tactics to get and stay well?
I would have to agree with Aliza. Number one thing that I always talk about with my patients more than anything else is nutrition. So not necessarily putting yourself on a restrictive diet, but really taking a look at what you are consuming, you know, how much sugar you're consuming, keeping a food diary. Meditation is a big thing that I also talk to my patients about, and exercise. And exercise could be something small, a 10-minute walk to start with and slowly building up, but moving your body, that gets the lymphatic tissues moving. So when we think of, you know, think, oh yeah, of course, diet and exercise, but think about how it changes the physiology. My Parkinson's patients, cannabis does not work for my Parkinson's patients unless they do rigorous boxing exercise. So for those that take the cannabis, if they don't do any exercise, the cannabis starts to not work. But if for those patients that exercise rigorously, they have to be out of breath, the cannabis works double.
Okay, cool. Thank you for that. Aliza and Dr. Chin, if someone wanted to learn more about you and the work that you're doing in this book, where would you like for me to send them?
For me, it's elementa.com. So it's ELLEMENTA, L for the French for her, and menta, Spanish for mind, her mind, elementa.com.
Wonderful. And you can find me at drjunechin.com, drjunechin.com.
And I'll have those links at 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/420. So Aliza, Dr. Chin, thank you so much for being a part of 40 Plus Fitness.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Hello, and thank you for sticking around after the interview. I really do appreciate this. I thought I'd take a few minutes to just kind of talk about some things that are going on personally for me. As you may be aware, if you've read the book, The Wellness Roadmap, I do seasonal ketosis. And so with the passing of the beginning of February, which is February 2nd is my birthday, I go into now what I call my famine mode. So I am going into ketosis now, trying to get into it. And the cool thing about seasonal ketosis is, one, it lets me kind of enjoy some of the things I want to enjoy through the holidays, through football season, and then through my birthday. But it also, you know, then I get into ketosis and I start leaning out for the spring and summer. So it works out pretty well for me. With one basic exception, I'm pretty much just like everybody else. And sometimes I feel a little stuck. This year, I probably did put on an additional 4 or 5 pounds more than I normally would during my feasting season. Being on an island, people are going out more. I probably found myself drinking a little bit more than I would have otherwise. Plus, Wally here on the island has a really good beer selection over at his brewery. So I found myself there a few more times than I might have otherwise anywhere else. And so like a lot of people, you know, being on the island, being here, doing these things, I feel a lot of those same pressures, I think. I feel like, you know, I get sucked into old habits. You know, even though I want to go full ketosis, you know, it's just people are out. I want to have a beer. I get sucked into that a little bit. And I kind of feel that. And then there's those moments where, you know, I just don't really feel necessarily like I want to go work out. So a lot of the things that other people have told me they struggle with, I actually get to experience that as I make these seasonal changes. Once I kind of get dialed in, it's a lot easier for me, but it's during this transition period that I really kind of feel that and kind of experience that. And in a way, I'm actually thankful for it because it gives me some perspective that I think a lot of trainers might not have. If they've always been healthy and fit, then how do they know how to get healthy and fit? They just know how to stay healthy and fit. So I do think I bring a perspective that's a little bit different than a lot of trainers. And going through the seasonal ketosis kind of brings that to light to me. You know, but a lot of cool things are going on. You know, I'm training people live. I'm still training people online. And so it's just really cool, you know, when I challenge a client to lift a little bit more weight and she's not quite sure she can do it. And then she does it. And just seeing that smile on her face just brightens my day. Or hearing the joy in the voice of a client that has put together a series of strategies that we've worked out to try to break some old habits and help her stay on track. And we're 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks down the line, and she's starting to see tangible results from those strategy changes. You know, having those conversations, having those opportunities to help people just really does put a lot of joy in my heart, really makes me feel good about what I'm doing now as a profession. And I want to do more of it. I just really love this. So I want to make a special offer to 10 people. And it's limited to 10 people because I just can't onboard more than that at any given time. But I'm going to offer a 14-day free trial to 40 Plus Fitness online training. So if you've wondered what online training is like, if you've thought maybe I should do this, but you've just kind of been on the fence, I think this is a great opportunity. Online personal training is the fastest growing style of online training, and it's doing that for a reason. See, as an online trainer, I'm not just with you 2 to 3 hours each week. I'm on your phone. There's an app that I'm going to give you that will allow you to communicate directly with me when you have issues. So I'm on your phone. I'm on the weekly conference calls. I'm in the Facebook group. I'm just a message away. And so I'm here to help you get healthy and fit. And with online personal training, particularly the 40 plus fitness style, the way I do it, we're building the strategies, we're building the programs, we're building the plans to help you get what you want. You're not going to get buried and mired in all of the minutia, all the different data. You're not going to go and do the same workout, the same thing everybody else does. Heck, you don't even have to go to the gym. I would say maybe a third of my clients actually go to the physical gym on a regular basis. Most of them work out from home. We put together home programs, and it really works out well for them. So I want you to try it out. So go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/trial. Again, it's only limited to 10 people. Once I hit the 10, we're done. And I'm only going to leave this open for about another week or so. So if you want an opportunity to learn about online personal training, I encourage you to go to 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/trial. If you have any questions, you can always email me, Alan@40plusfitnesspodcast.com, or on any of the Facebook pages, you're going to see a little icon at the bottom. That's my Facebook Messenger. So you click on that, and it's going to open me up in Facebook, and I'll be there to answer any questions you have. So again, 40plusfitnesspodcast.com/trial. Next time on the 40 Plus Fitness Podcast, we meet Kyle Jones and discuss cryotherapy. Until then, have a happy and healthy week.